time once again for the Post-Prison Education Program radio show. And we are lucky to have here live in the studios, Ari Cohn, founder and president of the Post-Prison Education Program. Ari, thanks again for coming in and spending time with us. It is another, we've been talking since we got here about 45 minutes ago. And it's we're beginning to wonder what the heck is going on with how long this this pandemic is lasting and its limitations on folks.
So yeah. If this was a phone-in talk-in kind of a show, we could have a conversation about how it's wearing on everybody, because it is. You know, there's our articles are starting to appear. Really intelligent articles about people's mental health. One of my coworkers just had a 34-year-old friend take his life in California, and it's probably out of all this isolation. You know, it's wearing me down. As of months ago, it wore me down, and every day is a little bit worse. It's bullshit.
Well, and combined with the
Did I get bleeped?
Not in time.
Sorry.
That's okay.
I didn't think that was a forbidden word.
Well, it's all dependent on that.
We really have to have a list and put it over here in the wall that people with that are older than dirt with trifocals can read. You know, I got the F word down. It's the other ones.
Well, we're still your training program still has four more months on it. So, God. So I think that it's a combination of the pandemic and the isolation from that, just combined with the other stuff that's going on in the world. You know, looking at our elected government here in the U.S. is a friggin' disaster.
Scary disaster.
And, you know, climate change, climate disaster continues to roll on, relatively unabated. In fact, probably one of the best things for that so far has been the pandemic and, you know, the ratcheting down of a bunch of different industries. But, you know, we won't see any positive effects from that for who knows how many years. So,
and I'm going to throw reentry into your list of pandemics. It was like Hannah was talking to me yesterday. I was at the office and she was social distancing, working from home, and I had one of my favorite NGOs and nonprofits for decades is NRDC. I absolutely
National Resource Defense Council.
Yeah, that? And that's sure. They're amazing, and they have a fabulous website. And so I had sort of directed Hannah to that website, and she's fallen in love with it. And she noticed that they have a section that's just got expert information on it. So like people who are like scientists and other experts reference the environment. And she was talking about, or we were talking about, adding to our website a section like that. And the first person that came to my mind was the guy that you and I were going to have on the radio show months and months ago, Mark Stern, mm-hmm. in the science and the research that he and Ingrid Benswanger did in 2007, and then reaffirmed in 2013, that has 5,000 plus prisoners dying from overdose and suicide within less than 2 years of their release. So that's going on, and we're seeing that people are living in hell in the prisons right now, and then they release to hell, we're spending a lot of our time trying to explain to people who are in the prisons what it's like out here, to just get them prepared. And I think I've never had a high opinion of the work releases and of the DOC's work releases. I've never thought of them as being effective, but right now I think they're very effective because they're helping people transition from what they're living and knowing in the prisons, and then they get into work release where they actually go out on the streets to jobs and stuff, and they can actually see what's going on here. Closed businesses and shuttered restaurants, and you can't even sit down at a Starbucks. And so, like, we've got a guy that's finishing 26 years, and he's at Bishop Lewis Work Release, which is always been one of the downtown Seattle work release. And so they, and that the staff there has always been, I always hesitate to name anybody employed by the DOC as like being a friend of mine or somebody I like, because I'm afraid DOC headquarters will fire them instantly, right? And, oh, you like Melissa Andrzejewski? She's gone, vaporized, right? You know? This guy, Steve Henderson, was recommended to me by a friend who's been out for quite a few years who did a serious amount of time. And so we've been working with Steve for a couple of years. But once he hit work release, then it went from being just aware that he was moving towards release to being pretty intense, and he arrives at a work release. And we're trying to work with him, but there's no prisoner internet there. And so we did something we never have done before. We shipped a computer into, we had Bellevue College ship a computer in, and then we shipped a Chromebook in, and the management there agreed to let us send in a Verizon jetpacks so that, which is phenomenal, because anybody on the jetpack has unfettered access to the internet. So anyway, so like Steve is enrolled in college, has financial aid, has been working on a laptop. He's finished 26 years, and so he's by his 6 months at work release, he's gotten a really good solid glimpse of what it's like out here, as opposed to being behind the walls of the Washington State Penitentiary or something, and all they can do is listen to family and us try to explain the unexplainable. So along with climate change and egocentric idiots that don't wear masks and COVID-19 and isolation and closed businesses and wrecked economy, reentry is right there. Really is. So, and we're overwhelmed with it. I mean, we've never worked harder. We've never worked more hours. We've never been more effective. So that's all cool, you know. But that's another, reentry is another piece of it. You take this thing that Mark Stern studied and reported on extensively, and it was horrible without COVID-19, and now it's unimaginably horrible. So
that's a great addition to your guy's website.
Yeah, well, I mean, Hannah won't get it up right away, but my first suggestion was Mark Stern, so I've got to introduce her to Mark, and then she'll probably do an interview with Mark if he's agreeable, kind of like what part of the backstories that she did with Jack Connelly, amazing lawyer in Tacoma, and Anna Mari Kausay, and Kevin Allen, she's interviewed. We don't have that up yet. Jenny Burton, we got that out. Kevin Allen, Marla Zink, a defense attorney we work a lot with. But we'll get his science up there right away. And then she'll try to talk to Ingrid Binswanger, who's now in Colorado, and then Mark Stern, and then just build it. There's lots of science on reentry, and none of it's good.
And even before the pandemic, reentry, I think people outside who don't know people who are serving time in prison or have family members have no recognition of how stressful it is for people getting released. Because you lose, I mean, you tell us, it seems, amongst other things, you lose complete track of what, you know, expectations and things are going on in society, and you get overwhelmed and scared.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, that totally reminds me of something that I haven't thought of for 15 years. It's like, in our first year, Tim Bouts, who was on our original board of directors and Walla Walla Community College teacher, who spent 35 years teaching in the Washington State Penitentiary, was that this guy was so loved by prisoners. You could walk the big yard. I've done it. And if you were with Tim, you didn't need guards with you, because everybody loved him. But through Tim, I met a woman named Janet Narum. And actually, this was like the first 3 months of 2006. And in the meeting just across the street from here at the law school, where 29 people met all day long to decide to, you know, to incorporate and seek tax-exempt status, Janet Narum came up from Walla Walla, and she was running a small nonprofit that worked only in Walla Walla. And at some point, I was down, and they had like it might have been a complimentary free play office inside of a church or something, Walla Walla, or they might have paid some rent for it, but they had it was a nice office. And I was down there one day and eating all these strawberries and stuff that you can get over on the east side of the state, you know, like right out of the garden. And she showed me this basket, going back to what you just said. I haven't thought of this in years. She showed me this basket of kites. So kites now are electronic. So if a prisoner wants to communicate with DOC staff, they go to the kiosk in the housing unit and they type a message. But 15 years ago and earlier, and even in the federal prisons when I was locked up, a kite was a piece of paper. In the feds, it was called a cop-out. So, and you'd write it to whoever. But she had all these kites from prisoners that were approaching release. And maybe, you know, some of these guys had committed murder or robbed banks or, you know, in some less whatever, you know, less scary, less violent, less confrontational, whatever. But guys who would have no trouble walking into your house with a gun in a hand and a knife in the other hand, kick your door in or walk into a bank, but they're terrified of release. I mean, and I looked through 300 kites that Janet had accumulated in these baskets, in this basket at her nonprofit in Walla Walla. And it was just amazing, just exactly what you just said. It's scary as hell. And, if you come out, I want to do a bunch of name calling today because I think people should be called out. There's one person I might just describe, but if you come out to a lot of support, it's not a big deal. You know, like me, my brother flies up from Florida to Philadelphia, rents a car, comes over to Minersville, Pennsylvania, stays in a nice hotel, drives over to the prison in the morning, helps me load my property in the trunk of the rental car. We go back to the hotel, and you know, And then I spend 10 days in his house in Florida, and then catch an airplane to Seattle, stay a month in a hotel, figuring out what part of town I want to live in. You know, that wasn't getting violated by a probation officer was worrisome, but as far as reentry and not having a roof over my head or whatever, that wasn't a problem for me, and it's sometimes not a problem for others, but for most people, you're coming out into homelessness and no family support because that got lost during your incarceration. And it's truly scary, and leads to crime. I mean, because what would you do if you're hungry and you're homeless, and the $40 that the DOC gave you at 7 o'clock that morning in Airway Heights, 300 miles away, you're down to $2, and you're hungry. You know, I know what you're going to do. And remember that we had Vincent Grondross on the show months ago, and he just flat out explained it, you know, because he'd done it 6 or 7 times. So it is scary. And now it's just worse. I mean, getting jobs, it's where there are people aren't hiring, restaurants are closed. It's really bad. And then you got to worry about catching COVID-19, and I don't know, no words. But there's like, it's really, I mean, it's the haves versus the have-nots in terms of like people who have support when they come out. And you know, there's this woman who I'm not going to name. She was a student of ours, and people who know me know how I feel about this person. And she's gotten a lot of publicity, and she's running for the legislature now, and she graduated law school. But she came out, first of all, she's a fake. She acts like she did something. She acts like she was this big criminal with this major addiction history. And she's in our sales force. She did about a year in prison, and she came out to a house and a husband and children in support, right? So her being successful at reentry, it's like a lie. It's like, you know, who couldn't be successful? Not, you know, how could you not be successful in that? It's when you come out into homelessness and no support and no money, and so on. When you have the right to tell Inslee that you walk on water and you're more competent than God, and you should be his advisor on reentry, and you know, all of that, whatever. But for most people, it's just not that way.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about NAMI Washington and Taylor Buck. And in fact, Jenny from NAMI Washington has been on this radio show with me before, mm-hmm. pre-COVID, before we did the October 9th town hall with Pete Early.
For those that don't remember, NAMI stands for?
You're killing me, because it's just NAMI, but it's like the preeminent mental health advocacy firm, I mean, entity, nonprofit, national in scope, big presence here. They're the group that...
National Alliance for Mental Illness.
Yeah. Okay. And they, you know, like Pete Early stood on the stage at Town Hall and shouted out to NAMI and yeah. pointed out he'd been a lifetime supporter. And that, you know, they're the preeminent advocates for people suffering mental illness, and bar none. And so, which is why we had Jenny on the panel at Town Hall in October with Pete Early. But their annual conference is going to be on your computer screen this year. And it's October 17th. And I got an email quite a few months ago and inviting us to apply to present. And I forwarded it to Taylor Buck in our office, who has a master's degree in gender studies and is passionate. And you can read about Taylor on our website. Just go to click on the button. But anyway, so she applied, and we were chosen. And so we have a panel on the 17th, and it's and Taylor's put the whole thing together. I mean, it has she's put the whole thing together. We've got two students, Kevin Allen, who you've met, and Stephen Algor, who just released from a really significant sentence. And they're on the panel with Taylor and Rachel Severs, who's also been on this radio show from Disability Rights Washington, one of my absolute heroes. And so we have this hour-long panel, and Hannah just put a newsletter out. It went out at 3:00 yesterday. So if you're on our listserv, then you got it yesterday. And by now, Hannah will probably have it on the blog section of our website, and on LinkedIn and Twitter and every damn where else. So, but it's going to be fabulous. I mean, this country and this state we've criminalized mental illness, and that's a crime, and so that's upcoming, and it's just I'm going to sit back and watch Taylor and Rachel and Stephen and Kevin do their thing and really, really enjoy it. So they've been doing all these meetings at Starbucks headquarters and at the Reserve restaurant over there. I mean, I don't know how many hours they've met and talked and WebEx and all that, but it's going to be, it's a big day. It's an important day. It's all day long. It's just not just our panel, but it's all day long, October 17th. And it's free, F-R-E-E, free. And so you can, you have to register, though. So you have to register. And we've been getting calls all over the country. I got an email from Katita Cabrera with the National Clearinghouse for Victims of Domestic Violence yesterday, and they're in Philadelphia, and she's she'd signed up to see it. So I'm like, it's going to be cool, and it's incredibly important. So go to the website and if Hannah doesn't have the newsletter up by now, she'll have it up tomorrow. I know.
Yeah.
So, anyway, big deal.
Hopefully they'll record it, and so that people can access the different panels later as well.
Yeah, yeah. And all of the panels are just it's a really great agenda, which I would expect of NAMI. So I want to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've talked about it before, and so years ago, Maggie Wilkins, who's now, I think, moved to Europe, was on our board, and she was the legislative policy person for League of Education Voters when I met her, and she came to our office, and we involved her when we brought Bruce Western in from Harvard and to town hall. And Maggie set up this WordPress blog for me called Ari Cohn Unhinged. And ever since, and it's been about 3,000 years, I've been trying to think what the first blog post is going to be. And I think the point of this is that 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 reentry is so bad. I mean, this is why I want to tell this anecdote, is that I've spent multiple years trying to figure out which is the worst thing about reentry. What's the greatest problem, right? And because I want to really slam that issue in the first thing that I write under that blog. And I don't want to miss it, you know. So I've spent 1 minute I think it's this, and 1 minute I think it's that. And there's so many horror stories with reentry and the criminal justice system, quote marks around justice, because there is none, that I've never been able to settle on what was the worst thing, you know, and that I wanted to highlight in the first post on the blog. And so May 16th, I was walking from my house at Green Lake to Mighty O Donuts, which has been my stress relief thing. It's like maybe round trip 2 miles. It's how I do it really early in the morning. Mighty O, they open at like 6, and I go up and get an apple fritter and 4 little donuts to feed to the crows on the way back to the house. And then Jenny Burton was once again sort of making the front page with her success, right? And I mean, her history at UW has been phenomenal, and her history before that at South Seattle College, you know, culminated with a special luncheon with Inslee down in Olympia, is recognized as one of 78 top students in the state. So, like, but here she was, I don't know, I think it was the Truman Scholarship this time, the Truman Award, and before that had been Martin Family, and it just dawned on me, that's it. That's the worst problem, and the problem that causes other problems is us electing and choosing and allowing people who don't know a, can I say goddamn, thank God, don't know a goddamn thing about reentry, but pretend they do, or get into positions where they can influence decision-making when they should not be there. And so one of the things that almost destroyed the post-prison education program, and we're still feeling the impact of it, was a legal battle that happened after we were given a $2.5 million CPRE grant by the Superior Court in Seattle, and that came out of the AT&T class action lawsuit, or the class action lawsuit against AT&T for ripping off families and prisoners and prisoners with outrageous collect call fees. And so when we were awarded that, and the judge gave us $1 million more than the plaintiff's attorney had recommended, which was $1.5 million, and you know, entities like the Innocence Project got nothing. I think Pioneer Human Services. So most entities got a third of what they asked for, or nothing. And the judge just went like an alphabetical order down the list, and we were right after Pioneer Human Services, which I think got nothing, but they might have got a third of what they asked for. And then we got $1 million more than had been recommended. And so we ended up with a different board of directors, and we ended up with this jerk. So Chris Youtz was Y-O-U-T-Z was the plaintiff's attorney, and what he knew about reentry was like nothing. I mean, he's a litigation guy in downtown Seattle, and he had these notions, and like one of them was that we shouldn't pay for legal expenses, right, of our students. And I don't know where that bald-headed, fat, fill-in-the-blank piece of shit. Okay, sorry. Okay, that's, you got to do the list on the wall. But, you know, and Yalts, come see me if you don't like any of this, because I'd love to talk to you. He got it in his ignorant head that we shouldn't pay for legal expenses for our students. And also we shouldn't pay for meals. There was all kind of insanity. And then we had to go through all this bookkeeping and a special accounting that was going to cost $6,000 a year that we couldn't pay for out of the proceeds of the award. And the thing got to be so burdensome that I hired Fred Diamondstone, a lawyer, to basically file a motion telling the court to take the money and stick it where the sun doesn't shine. And we did. And so on our board, we had people like Laura Zarowski, who's across the street at Innocence Project right now, and Amanda Dubois, who's sort of a divorce lawyer, and Anna Tolan, who was at the Innocence Project. I don't know what happened to her. And then we had students of ours, which was a Google requirement. And the board split over whether we were going to hand back this money or continue with it. It was a 3-year grant at $83,000 a quarter. And because of things like all these stupid rules that Chris Yalts kept coming up with, I finally just drew the line in the sand, you know, as they say, and I'm like, okay, this is it, I'm done, and one of the two crucial things that caused me to just like to be part of the process that split our board of directors in half and really turned people that have been like close friends into enemies. What was not being able to pay for lawyers for students, which was insane. I think Yalts must have stupidly, out of a magnificent amount of humongous, indescribable ignorance, must have thought that if a former prisoner needs a lawyer, they've done something wrong. That's idiocy. It's always proven to be, when a former prisoner, in our case, needs a lawyer, it's because government's done something wrong. And I can give you example after example after example. But what happened with that policy of you can't use lawyers and you can't buy students meals? Like, you can buy them groceries, right? But you couldn't like, a big part of what we do is trust building. We can't work with somebody if they don't trust us, and it's both ways. We have to trust them, they have to trust us. And one of the ways pre-COVID-19 to do that is to sit down and have a meal together. And that, it could be at Starbucks, or it could be at Taco Del Mar. It's never not expensive. Or if there's a big celebration like Jenny Burton graduating the drug court and Bob Day, a software engineer from Google, who's been a magnificent supporter for a million years and really, really sort of took Jenny under his wings, is there, and then you might have a fancy meal. But for the most part, it's like Taco Del Mar or burritos or a hamburger from 206 Burgers or you know, Starbucks or something. And those two things, just, I'm like, that ain't going to be. And then it fried my butt that we were going to have to pay for the accounting, but not be able to use the proceeds. And then another thing was like, I'm getting off topic because the list is as long as my leg. But so Jenny on May 16th had just been in the news again. I mean, on the UW website, front and center, and the president of the University of Washington extolling, you know, her successes, and if the Truman Award is huge, it's a national competition. It was a major recognition, and so walking the Mighty Dough Donuts that morning, I'm like, you know what? If I hadn't hired a lawyer for Jenny when she was sitting in the Pierce County Jail facing 55 more months, that was the offer on the table, and five more felony convictions, she would have just been getting out of prison instead of having graduated South Seattle with high honors, honored by the governor, the special luncheon in Olympia, and then getting accepted into UW, Martin Family Scholarship, not to mention she's going to be 8 years clean and sober in just a couple of days. I think she's turning 84 in, I think, 10 or 11 days, and actually 48. But all this stuff that's going on in her life, none of it would happen. And I'm going to write her an email when I leave here tonight. I'm going to be like, tell me, you know, please write and tell me where you would be right now if we hadn't hired Sonny Coe. And so, like, and I don't know where it is, but it wouldn't be an honor student at the University of Washington headed for law school. And so one of the people on our board of directors at the time, who was Adam, just like fiery in support of keeping this CPRAE money, which was only, again, it was 3 years and then it's over, right? We would have had to violate our board policy, as, you know, Googlers who have been big supporters of ours require, you know, really, they want people who we work for to have a voice in our decision making. And Chris Yauts and his ignorance would have forced us to get, it did force us to get to remove students and graduates from the board. And he tried to remove me from the board. We ended up with a third hearing in Judge Anderson's court, and we won that one. And so I stayed on the board. But Amanda Dubois and Laura Zarowski and Anna Tolan, they were like, at all costs, we have to keep this CPRAE money. You know, they had about as much vision as a rock, or they had less brains than God gave to a crowbar when it came to this. It was, they, you know, and they were about as future envisioning as a dead person, and because they were only looking at the immediate pot of gold and not looking 3 years down the road. And so what really set me off is Amanda, now that Jenny has all this success, guess where Jenny's part-time job is? Amanda's divorce law firm. So, and I don't think Amanda Dubois has enough sense in her goddamn... Sorry.
You can say goddamn.
Oh, okay, oh, good. I'm like...
It's all the others you can.
It's like in her head to have thought of the insanity that exists, that she literally was split the board of directors and all over the CPRAE grant, if she had been successful and we had kept that money, then I wouldn't have been able to hire Sonny Coe, whose retainer was $8,000, even though Sonny, and get Jenny into the drug court and get her out of these 55 months of prison. And she wouldn't have seen South Seattle. I doubt we would have seen her when she came out of prison. You know, who knows? But I just think that the irony is that now Jenny's part-time job is at Amanda Dubois' junk-ass divorce law firm, family law or whatever. And it really kind of fries my ass, if you can't tell. But the only reason I'm telling that story is we're just constantly surrounded, not we the nonprofit, but you and I and the state and everybody, by people making decisions that don't have a bit of knowledge. They haven't got a clue. And, you know, some of my pet peeves are like Jeannie Darnielle. you know, at the Washington State Senate, right? Who she's not single-handedly, but she was part of the cadre from Pierce County that put county of origin into law. And that is an absolute driver of recidivism, bar none. Mental illness may be, probably is, more a cause of recidivism than county of origin, but county of origin is right behind mental illness and comorbidity and addiction. And that's Jeannie Darnielle, this grandmotherly-looking person that everybody likes just because she's this grandmotherly-looking person, you know? And if you're these people who are infatuated or whatever, blinded by being in the presence of, a Washington State senator actually talked to me. Let me sit down in her marble palace office. Oh my God. I've died and gone to heaven. This is better than beluga caviar and nasty spumante, you know? And so you get people like Jeannie Darnielle. And I tell you another, Roger Goodman can smoke dope with his children in the car and endanger their lives, but we've elected him to be chair of the Public Safety Committee, right? I mean, part of his divorce was what came out was that, you know, he's like driving around high as a kite with his kids in the car. Get high at home or whatever you want to do with it. Get high sitting in the grass at Green Lake, but don't get high as a kite in your car driving around with your kids. And he's been elected by the 45th to be, he's now chair of the Public Safety Committee. Thank you, Frank Chopp. You're such a wonderful person. You know, it's just so, we've got all these people making these decisions that are life and death decisions for people, and they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And so like when Amanda Dubois, and I understand from a law student who's working at the Innocence Project as a, you know, work study kind of a thing, that Laura would rather badmouth me for killing the Sea Prey grant than breathe oxygen, you know, and it's apparently almost an ongoing nonstop thing. The resounding crazy example was Jenny, is Jenny now works for Amanda Dubois' law firm. I mean, she's a full-time student at UW, and she wouldn't even know Amanda if I hadn't hired a lawyer. And I couldn't have hired a lawyer unless I gave back the Sea Prey money. And with this, literally, there's written communications where our board split up, and it was like, okay, if you give back the Sea Prey money, we are leaving. And that was Laura and Amanda and Anna Tolan and Sean Hopwood and some other junk ass person. But it's just an irony. It's a complete irony to me. But the key point is you can look at all these problems that we have in the state, that prisoners have, former prisoners have, and probably all other issues. And I think they go back to people making decisions when they don't have any knowledge. And so above every issue that I could ever highlight on that Ari Cohn Unhinged blog, I think it's that. It's allowing people who are ignorant as F to make decisions that influence lives. And if this gets back to Amanda, and I'm going to try my best to make sure it does, then just sit your fat self down and ask yourself where you think Jenny Burton would be today if I hadn't hired Sonny Coe. And I know the answer. And it wouldn't be like at UW with all the honors and all the progress she's made, because she would have just not too long ago come out of prison. She would have gone back for 55 months. So that's Ari Cohn Unhinged on the radio show. I think this is about as unhinged as I've let myself be. And I'm only half as unhinged as I want to be right now. So, you know, Sue me, somebody. Chris Yauts, if you don't like what I said, sue me. I'll see you in court, if not on the streets. So, you know, and I this is another thing where I can't. So we have a team meeting every week. Some of us will be in the office and some of us will be WebEx, but from 10 to 11 every Monday, our entire staff gets together for an hour. And anybody can put on the agenda whatever they want on the agenda. And you have a personal check-in, and then you have, you know, program issues, you know, in your field of responsibility, and that all gets discussed. And one of the things I was whining and crying about in the last team meeting was that a lot of our stories we can't tell. And some of the greatest successes, we can't tell the story because maybe they involve mental illness and the stigma is so much against that that the student would be embarrassed. I mean, we've had a few students that are brave, Kevin Allen at the head of the list, who just will, like, up front and center talk about his diagnosis and his battles. But most people would rather be called a murderer than somebody who's suffering mental illness, which is a really sad. That's the kind of thing, by the way, that NAMI tries to address. And it's horribly sad. So, but anyway, we've got all these incredible success stories that we can't tell. And maybe it's a guy with a master's degree from the University of Washington in applied mathematics, but he had a sex crime. You know, so, and we spent a ton of money on this guy I'm thinking of and worked for him for years and actually employed him. But we can't tell his success story because of such a stigma against people with histories of sex crimes. So 3 weeks ago, a guy came out of prison, somebody we've known for 10 years, and the West Seattle office of the Department of Corrections, his probation officer, CCO, Taylor's had on her desk a cell phone for this guy for like 3 weeks. I mean, a brand new Google Pixel phone is sitting on her desk, just waiting for him to get out. And he releases, and he's registered for school, right? I'm either at Bellevue College or UW Bothell. Everything is set for him to start building a life, right? And the first thing that happens on his first day of freedom is his CCO says, you can't have a cell phone and you can't access the internet. So like two Fridays later, you know, a lawyer takes that in front of the court and the judge hands the CCO her ass. And so he's in school now and has our Google Pixel phone in his hand, and he has internet access, and he's doing extraordinarily well. But there's a legal document, and I've never been, and I hadn't read, and it was a motion to the judge that sentenced him to the last 9 years, 10 years ago, right? And I hadn't read that in 10 years, and I had to go looking for it in our files. There's so much hell. It's 25, 30 page motion, right? But it tells life stories. So it tells this young man's story going back to before he was born. When his mom was running and gunning and dealing and using. In the state taking him away from his mom and putting him in foster care. And after that, it was one foster care after another for 14 foster cares. And so I was reading this legal document And I thought, you know, we've worked hard for this guy, and we've worked hard for this person's mom, and for 10 years. And I thought, if there's any story, I mean, if anybody ever wanted a good example of what the post-prison education program does, it's meeting people where they're at. And so in this case, it was 2010. And that's usually not a really good place. And then working for them till they get to where these people are at today. And we can't tell the story. I mean, I can tell the story anonymously now. I wouldn't even give that legal document to a foundation manager to read without, that wouldn't be by email. That would have to be like, there would have to be an understanding of why I'm doing it, because it's a horrible story. I mean, it's a young boy being raped and raped and raped and abused in one foster home after another. And then the state, instead of doing something right to offset the trauma and abuse that they made happen by putting him in foster care, they send him to prison. That's so typical for this worthless goddamn state that Jay Inslee's running. There's no words. I mean, well, this is my unhinged day for sure. We need to start talking about petunias and pansies or something. But you know, really, it's like the state created this problem, destroyed this young man's life, threw him in these foster cares homes, 14 of them, and it's just rape and abuse, never unending. And then their response to, I mean, instead of helping, working to fix that trauma and abuse, they lock him up. I mean, I don't even have the words. And this is a great guy, and he's got a courageous mom, and you know, really, and this is putting it kindly, I really wish if somebody just blew up the Washington State Legislature campus and sold it to Marriott Resorts, it would, and then use the money that these worthless people suck in payroll to help people in meaningful ways, it'd be a big improvement over where we're at right now. You know, they could just start the bulldozer at the governor's mansion and then just come over the hill, get the ledge building, and then get Jack and get JLOB and get Pritchard, and then call up Marriott. You know, sell all that marble, give it to Habitat for Humanity. If you got to have legislators, why can't they meet in a goddamn warehouse? You know, and then make sure that the decision makers that you have meeting in the warehouse are knowledgeable about what they're deciding about. And don't have people like Roger Goodman, who's driving around with his kids in the car some years ago, high as a kite, in charge of public safety. Come on. You know, or Jeannie Darnell creating County of Origin after Sine die, you know, after the session's over and she and her buddies get together and appease Jerry Horn, alcoholic prosecutor in Pierce County, and write that into law, despite the fact it never saw a minute of a hearing, never got voted on, never got nothing, no review. All right, we got 6 minutes to talk about petunias and
just 5 minutes
and zinnias and marigolds.
Oh, there'll be none of that. It seems to be a problem that runs across the board in our current state of affairs, where people who are in charge and calling the shots are purposely keeping all the knowledgeable people out, the people that are, you know, at street level dealing with these things. Again,
yep.
We're looking at, you know, across the country, cities, people are protesting in the streets,
yep.
trying to bring about, you know, laws and change and or tweak the system, if although some people have suggested bringing it down, towards, you know, bringing equity and justice to people of color, black people. And again, these people aren't being called, at least here in Seattle, these people aren't being called into the table to discuss the solutions
no.
that they know would work.
Right.
We've seen the same thing with the homeless problem that's,
yep.
you know, been happening. And it seems like a repeating theme of let's.
I don't think it's repeating. I think it's just never ending. I don't think it ever.
The play is still running.
To repeat, it's got to stop, right?
Sure.
And I think, you know, like one of the reasons I love this panel that Taylor's put together is it's got two black students of ours on it, Stephen Al Gore and Kevin Allen. And so, like, if you had legislative types or Inslee types or Sonia Hallam types, you know, people from OFM in the governor's office, making a decision about who's going to talk about these solutions, then you'd have a bunch of old white guys like Chris Yauts, you know, on the panel talking about stuff they haven't lived, they have no exposure to, they have no knowledge of. And, you know, it reminds me, the legislature had, I got 3 minutes, I'm going to do this quick. The legislature had a reentry task force. They voted in 2005, and it went 9 months of 2006. I think I've talked about it before. And its goal was to reduce recidivism. And you had all, it was a lily white task force, Republicans and Democrats. The chairs were white people. The vice chairs were white people, Debbie Rigala and Mike Carroll. The governor was white, Chris Gregoire. It was white. And at a point, I got really mad, and I had some influence with that thing, and I was on all four work groups. And so I, to the extent I could, I just put my foot down and made a big mess, and I think their attitude sort of was probably like, okay, make the crazy guy happy, and he'll shut up and go away. And so, but my... I was like, you know, you're making all these decisions about reentry. You ought to talk to some prisoners and some former prisoners. It took me 2 weeks of haranguing and email and really being nasty to get Debbie Rigala and Mike Carroll, and Debbie's retired now, Mike Carroll's dead, to agree to hear from a prisoner for a couple prisoners for 4 hours out of 9 months. And so one morning, finally, we had Kevin Allen come in, and Bob Markle, who's a hero of mine, brought a student, a female, who had become an iron worker in. But it was a major battle to get these fancy pants white people in their marble palaces to listen to the people who were living and had real knowledge of how to cure recidivism. And that's just typical. That's just typical, you know. And we allow it. You know, we allow it. So I don't know. But it's not a repeat. It's a never-ending, ongoing, sickening, outrageous, egregious, heinous, reprehensible. Come on, help me here. Act like you're
unbased thesaurus. We are really out of time. And want to do a quick reminder that you are doing one of the panels on the NAMI's National Conference coming up on October 17th.
NAMI Washington panel, October 17th. Go to our website, and if Hannah doesn't have it up under events or
something,
or the blog section already, it'll be there by tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Well, with that, we're out of time.
Okay.
Been talking with Ari Cohn. He is founder and president of the Post-Prison Education Program. You can find out more on their Facebook page by the same name or at their website, postprisonedu.org.